This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
I've got Chloe on the phone for you right now.
Oh, have you? Oh, good morning, Chloe. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So teachers and staff at the University of Melbourne are on strike.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. For a lot of reasons.
Yep.
So we've got six key claims that we're fighting for with the university, and we've been bargaining for over a year now, and the university really hasn't made any concessions to us, and several times, you know, they've asked us to a two-week extension on bargaining or something like that, and it's taken them, you know, 11 weeks to get back to us. So we're pretty fed up, and we really just need better pay and conditions. So a couple of the key claims that are the big ones that staff are really interested in is secure jobs. So yep. The NTU has put up a claim for 80% secure jobs and also workloads, which are pretty much in crisis at the university. Yeah.
Is it fair to say, Chloe, that the universities post-COVID are pretty much back to normal operations? So is there still a very high percentage of online, or is the overwhelming majority in person?
Yeah, so the university's really driven people to come back to campus. So I think this is the last year that they're going to be running mostly like hybrid classes, so classes that run both on campus and online. I think next year they're transitioning to almost all online, with the exception of a few, I think, postgrad courses. So yeah, it's definitely there are still, I think, a few online, but mostly everyone's back on campus now.
Okay.
Chloe, can you tell us why is the negotiation going so long? It's over a year now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been over a year, I think, that we've been at the bargaining table. And yeah, I mean, the NTU, like, we have, you know, we came in very prepared. We came in, you know, we did a lot of consultation with members, and we had a lot of working groups so that all the kind of different sections of our staff could, you know, insecure workers, professional staff, academic staff could actually put on the table what they wanted in this EBA. So we came in quite organised, and I think it's been very clear to us that every step of the way the university's been behind and dragging their feet. And so we've been pretty clear from the beginning what we've been fighting for, and we really just haven't been able to get very much out of the university. And as I said several times, they have you know, missed their own deadlines, dragged it out for, you know, saying they need a two-week extension and then taking, I think, you know, 6 weeks or 11 weeks to come back. So, yeah, we really don't still want to be bargaining at this stage. But, yeah, I think until we see the university move on those things, yeah, we'll keep taking action.
Do you think, Chloe, it sounds to me like they're just trying to delay an inevitable settlement? By dragging this out, are they trying to wear you down, perhaps?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one way to look at it. I think, you know, it's very interesting as well that people who've been in bargaining rounds before have said that they haven't seen them as disorganised as this time. So, you know, potentially, I think, I don't know what their strategy is. So they definitely could be trying to wear us down. But I think, yeah, I think the frustrating thing is that, you know, a lot of universities across the country are bargaining at the moment, and we've seen universities in a similar position to UniMelb, you know, like UCID and ANU actually get, you know, things that we're asking for, and the university's still pushing back on it. So it's also really frustrating that, yeah, it does seem like some of these things are inevitable. We know that the University of Melbourne can afford it. Yeah, so it's just really frustrating that this is dragging out when, you know, really it shouldn't have to.
I mean, they're, you know, I haven't seen food parcels being delivered to the management of the university. I mean, they've got, you know, when you look at, for example, the Vice-Chancellor, I think he's paid $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Okay, big job, tough job, $1.5 million is a lot. Perhaps he can go and work for Qantas. But, you've got some staff that have actually gone 3 months or more without pay. So how do they justify this? Can they?
I mean, I would say they can't. They try to. But, yeah, the reality is that, yeah, we've got a lot of staff who are struggling. We actually managed to catch the VC the other day as he left the university executive meeting. We actually picketed outside the building. And some of our insecure workers were actually able to catch him on the way out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was particularly frustrating. You know, some of the people were saying, you know, I'm struggling to pay my rent. And I think his response was, well, we just gave you a 4% pay rise. So, you know, they did come out with a pay offer at the start of the week. And, you know, as if like that sort of solves all the problems, like, well, we've given you this 4% pay rise, which is still behind inflation. So it just seems like there's a real disconnect between, you know, what senior leadership are kind of saying and thinking will work for staff and what staff are actually asking for.
Yeah. Isaac's got a final question for you, I think.
Yeah, so the Vice Chancellor is being paid so much, and you kind of wonder, how does the uni...
$30,000
a week. I can't believe it. I'm lost for words.
$4,000 a day.
Yeah. Yep. How does the university kind of justify that payment for the Vice Chancellor?
Well, I think the argument that is always made is that, you know, if we want to attract the top people into this role, you know, we need to be competitive with, you know, like corporate and industry and stuff like that. But I think the really interesting thing is that we're an educational institution, and if you actually look at, you know, the university council, for example, it's made up almost entirely of people from the corporate world, from, you know, investment bankers and those sort of roles. And there's actually no one on the council who is an expert in education. And so I think it's really just this clash between, I think, you know, staff really want to invest in teaching and in the university being this educational institution. And there's kind of this increased corporatization of the university world. And we can see that reflected in, you know, sort of the executive pay, and, you know, the makeup of the university council. And I think it's this real disconnect. And I think this is, you know, partly what's at the heart of this, you know, this battle in our EBA is, you know, part of what is at stake here is what is a university. And I think that's being borne out pretty clearly here. So I think the university tries to justify it on those grounds. But I think one of the things that, yeah, has become really clear through this campaign is that staff disagree.
Yeah. We're out of time, Chloe, but I'd, you know, perhaps next time you engage with them, the argument that we need to pay, you know, vice chancellors, et cetera, this amount of money is to be competitive in the market. How about you apply the same rules to your staff?
Absolutely.
Thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. It's an interesting subject and one that's flying a bit below the radar for those of us who are not directly involved. Once again, thank you for your time, and I hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and I hope you have a great weekend too.
Thank you. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Isaac. Stay with us. Coming up, Neil Farrow and a whole lot more.
What's your view? Let us know by sending us a text 0427-JOY949 or on Twitter at SatMagJOY949.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.